Hello, podcast listeners. We know podcasts are a great way to catch up on a program that you may have missed on KSJE, and it's provided as a free service of this radio station. But you know, KSJE is now listener-supported, and so while you enjoy this podcast, we hope that you'll also take some time to join KSJE. Become a member today. It's quite easy to do. Just go to our website at ksje.com/support and pick the level of support that best matches your budget. Thanks again for listening. Here's your podcast.
Good morning. This is Tracy Hales-Vass with Right on Four Corners on KSJE 90.9 FM in Farmington, New Mexico. Today I'm talking with Jeff Hebiger about his two new books, Untouchable and Unavoidable. Good morning, Jeff.
Good morning.
Well, I really enjoyed reading Untouchable and Unavoidable, the two follow-ups of...
Unremarkable was the first one, yes.
Unremarkable, and then Untouchable and Unavoidable.
Yes.
Untouchable is now out, and Unavoidable, is it out also?
Unavoidable is the third in the series, and it comes out on May the 4th of this year.
I was excited to see Saul...
Imbirowitz.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Our resident vampire.
Mm-hmm.
Glad to see him again and his partner Christian. So why don't you, before we go further, give a little idea to our listeners what these are about.
So the series, it's a trilogy right now. There are three books in it, and they basically follow the... things that happen in our main character's life, Saul Imbirowitz. We introduce him in our first book, Unremarkable, and he is what the title of the book suggests. He is an unremarkable person. He is a postal worker. He's just set out on his own from living with his parents. So he's got his own place now. It's not the best place because he's just a postal worker.
Right.
But he's trying to make it on his own. And in Unremarkable, Saul has some very remarkable encounters, starting with members of the Chicago mob. Mm-hmm. The books take place in the late 20s, early 30s, so during the Prohibition era. And Saul has encounters with Bugs Moran and Al Capone. And he also has some run-ins with the feds. All these different groups all of a sudden want something from him. Mm-hmm. And in that book, he then also discovers that vampires are not a myth.
Right.
And spoiler for a few people, but I needed to be able to talk about the next books. In Unremarkable, Saul is killed. He gets killed by Al Capone. And at the end of the book, he wakes up and has become a vampire. Untouchable picks up the series from that point. Saul and his is now working for the head of the the group most famously known as the Untouchables, headed by Alec Ness. Saul has gotten to work for him. They're trying to do the things they were doing to stop Capone from selling illegal liquor. But there's an ulterior motive because, another spoiler here, Al Capone is also a vampire. And Saul begins to work, and he's been partnered with one of the characters from the first book, Agent Christian Wright. And Christian lives up to his name. He is a very religious person, and he would prefer to stake Saul as opposed to work with him. But they're forced to work together to try and stop Al Capone. And the adventure in that book takes place in Chicago, moves on through to Atlantic City, and a large mob conference that's being held there, where Saul has an encounter with another vampire and Capone in a very climactic battle. And in the end of that book, it actually ends on a real historical point when Al Capone was arrested for possession of a handgun in Philadelphia in May of 1929, excuse me. And so that's where that book ends. Book three, the newest book, which will be coming out in May, Unavoidable, is kind of wraps up the Saul trilogy. And in it, it takes place about a year after the first two books. Al Capone is being released from prison, and Christian and Saul have gone to make sure that the gangster and vampire doesn't get up to anything wrong. The book starts with a dramatic car chase between them and people who have come gunning for Capone, and Saul and Christian must try and figure out what's going on. Is this just a gang thing? Is this something more? There are hints that there might be another vampire that's making a move. Unfortunately, they get pulled off the case. They're told to not go near Capone whatsoever. None other than director J. Edgar Hoover himself comes into play and orders Christian and Saul to stay away and to do something different. Unfortunately, this other mysterious vampire does make an appearance, and Saul all of a sudden finds that not only just is he is in danger, but his family is now in danger as well. And to protect them, Saul must make some choices that will definitely make changes, even more dramatic changes than he's had in his life, as the book concludes. So that's general recap.
It's fascinating, the character arc that unremarkable Saul goes through over these books. He's not just the weakling postal worker anymore.
Definitely not. I mean, and that's one of the fun things about that we had fun with writing the character was, you know, Saul is a very ordinary person, very naive in the ways of the world in the first book. And by the third book, he's very much a, you know, really come into his own. Mm-hmm. He's still naive a little bit in ways, but he's definitely grown as a character, as well as some of the other characters in the series as well.
Right.
And that's been one of the funnest things to do about writing this character with Saul.
Now, when you say we, I know you told us last time that the book is written with your partner.
Croy Kazee, yes. Yeah.
And so was this done the same way through phone conversations and emails and such?
Oh, pretty much, yeah. You know, we started writing the first book together, the same process generally holds true. You know, we'll sit down together and kind of figure out a general outline for the story, bouncing the ideas off of each other, figuring out what are the points in the story, the important plot points, the character arcs and everything. I then take it and I'll write a rough draft of the story and send it back to Coy. Coy then takes it and fixes all of my prose and grammar and changes the dialogue to really match the characters. That's his skill set. That's where he really shines. And then we get together and read through it together to make sure that we didn't miss anything, that we're both happy with how the book came out and the story and everything. So we'll sit down and over multiple sessions, usually through like a FaceTime or a Zoom type call or something, to go over the story while we're working on it in a Google Doc.
That's
technology
great.
Is wonderful for collaboration.
Exactly. Long-distance collaboration in the writing of this. Now, are both of you Elliot Ness and Al Capone scholars?
I don't know if we would say we're scholars. We're both fans of history. We're both fans of that era.
Mm-hmm.
I became a little bit of a scholar. I read several books, biographies pertaining mostly to Al Capone, but a few relating to just the general history of the Prohibition era and some of the other characters in it, you know, big people and everything. You know, but I don't know if I would call myself a scholar, a casual fan of the era. So.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know enough to take the stories or the true stories and then lay the paranormal on top of it. And you've done that really well.
And that was something that we really wanted to try and do was, you know, especially the first book, Unremarkable, starts out on February 14th, 1929, the date of the infamous St. Valentine's Day Massacre.
Mm-hmm.
And that was kind of our premise is, you know, there's a lot that's unknown about that from a historical point. Nobody still to this day knows who ordered that hit to take out the people that at that garage to order the gunmen to go in there and shoot them. And so there's still some speculation. And speculation is one of those fun things as a writer that gives us that wiggle room that we can play
right.
with, so we could do that. We kept that up with the trying to hit certain historical arcs or points, in especially Al Capone's history in the second book, Untouchable. As I said earlier during the synopsis, at the end of that book ends at an actual historical event where Al Capone is arrested in Philadelphia. Prior to that, he was in Atlantic City. Anybody who's out there who might be a fan of the television series Boardwalk Empire, that setting, it was fun, and there was an actual meeting of gangsters from all over the country in Atlantic City that we hit on. So it was kind of fun to play on some of those points as well. We took a couple of departures in the last book. The beginning of the book deals with Al Capone leaving prison, an event that actually happened, an event where in the book we say that he was let out a day early, and he was. The warden actually transferred him to a different prison because he expected all sorts of gawkers and crowds, and he didn't want to create a big media circus. In our book, he's just let out a day early. We have a little bit of fun to be able to play with some of the history as well as to fit in actual events into our storyline to give it that bit of authenticity.
It is. It's very believable. And I love J. Edgar Hoover coming into this last one also.
Yeah, he's a fun character to write.
Yeah, I bet. Well, that was interesting how they how you pulled that all together.
Well, thank you.
Yeah, so it was some jigsaw puzzle work there between the two of you within the spectrum of the whole truth. I like the new characters, and we see some of the old characters. I'm not going to give it away. And some new paranormal stuff there toward the end.
Yeah, and that's been something that's been really fun is creating that longer arc that stretches across three books.
Right.
We had a general idea from when we first wrote the first book, or at least by the time we had ended the first book, we had a general idea of what we wanted to do across all three books. You know, what's funny is that as we wrote the books, as we wrote the second book, Untouchable, some things about certain characters, there's a character that Saul meets. He's his best friend at the post office in the first book.
Mm-hmm.
And in the second book, we find out that this best friend, just a guy named Joe, mm-hmm. an ordinary guy that Saul works with, is actually a vampire. You know, was fun to play with, and it was something that actually we didn't really know until we had finished writing the first book. And it seems kind of odd to say, but Joe basically told us, there's more to me here than what you guys are telling.
Right.
And so to be able to tell a little bit of his story and hint at things in the second and then in the third book as well has been a lot of fun to develop that character out and to take some of the other characters like Moira, like mm-hmm. Saul's family mm-hmm. and everything, and to work them all together, fit all the pieces together has been really fun.
Yeah, I bet it is. And that's what I was, another thing I was going to ask you, when you wrote the first one, were you planning on the trilogy?
We had planned on a trilogy in the sense that we had three titles picked out. We knew we wanted to call them Unremarkable, Untouchable, and Unavoidable.
Mm-hmm.
Beyond that,
makes sense.
We hadn't quite worked out all of the specific details,
mm-hmm.
But we knew that generally that we wanted to tell a story across those three books. And everything. So that's what we've done. I think we did a fairly good job of it.
Mm-hmm.
But I know that Saul's story isn't done. We have other stories that we want to do with him, and they will probably take the form of additional trilogies.
Oh.
So they kind of stand alone, but they will continue his story and the other characters there, Christian and Saul's sister, Joe, and some of the other characters.
Oh, good. I was going to ask if there will be another, because I saw that you left it hanging. They were like, okay, this could go further.
Yeah, we did the old Hollywood ploy at the end of Unavoidable, where the story itself in Matt's book and that kind of general story arc has been concluded, but we left some openings.
Exactly.
And we left a few hints that you know, in the spirit of, you know, if we had never could do anything else, at least part of the story arc would be done. Mm-hmm. But there are some hints. There are some people that Saul meets in book three that are going to take a bigger place in future stories and everything. So what's funny is that there are stories that are developing. We want to tell Joe's story. So we are planning a standalone book that will talk about who Joe is and how he came to become a vampire. There's another standalone story that we want to write that fleshes out one of the characters, a new adversary that Saul meets briefly in, or at least learns about briefly in Unavoidable, the mysterious voodoo priest that he learns about. You know, so we want to tell that story and then coalesce them all into a new trilogy that will then bring in things from the 1930s, because I want to tell stories that continue to touch on some of the historical events and the idea that gangsters are involved in tangentially or even directly to supernatural or paranormal events. I really want to bring in characters like Machine Gun Kelly and some of those kinds of characters.
That sounds really exciting. I guess I don't want to talk too much about the voodoo character because I don't want to give anything away, but that was very intriguing.
Yeah, and she's one that she's still kind of in the shadows a lot, mostly because we're still fleshing her out.
So. Well, that's, yeah, that makes sense. She'll reveal herself to you in time. No doubt.
Oh, yes.
This would be a good time for you to read something for us, if you would.
Would you like me to read a bit from Unavoidable?
Okay.
Let's see here. So this is from the second chapter of Unavoidable. It's where the action really begins. And in this, Al Capone has just left prison. And Saul and Christian, who have been sent to keep an eye on him, make sure he basically that he gets to Chicago without causing any kind of trouble, are following him. And so I'll start here.
Okay.
Don't lose him, I said, as Capone's car turned west to head out of Philadelphia. He is the only other car on the road, Christian said, gesturing to the empty road with one hand. Besides, we know where he's going. If the warden's information was right, it was. Why would he lie to Ness? And if Al Capone sticks to the plan, I added. Christian didn't have a reply for that, and I felt a small tingle of victory. We were approaching an intersection. Capone's car slowed and then went on straight up the road. I said, weren't they supposed to turn if they were going to the train station, like they were supposed to? Christian's reply was to gun the engine. We sped through the intersection. He pointed to a sign that read, Airport, 5 miles. That's where they're going. He's going to fly home, Christian said, sounding smug. Great, I said. I've never been on a plane before. Christian started to say something, but I laughed to let him know that I was joking. The road curved to the left, and Capone's sedan disappeared around the bend, briefly hidden by a cluster of trees and shrubs. As we made the turn, a Model A Ford raced up along a side road, the car spraying dirt and gravel over us as it skidded onto the highway. Mother of God, Christian swore and jerked the wheel. We avoided colliding with their bumper by mere inches, and my dead heart raced as I had a vision of being decapitated in a horrible car crash on a Pennsylvanian county road. That would be a great headline, quipped Sarah. Mighty vampire slain in car crash. I ignored my sister's sarcasm as Christian kept us on the road. Crazy county drivers, he complained. Something wasn't right about this, and my arm hairs stood up. I looked over at the Ford and then spotted it. The plates, I said, pointing, they're from Illinois. Just then the Ford accelerated. A window on the passenger side rolled down, and I saw the distinctive shape of a Tommy gun poke out of the car. Gun, I yelled, just as the staccato of bullets ripped through the air. Christian jerked the wheel, but it was suddenly clear that they were shooting at Capone. Bullets impacted with a loud thwang, thwang, thwang on the rear of the Dodge. The big car struggled to accelerate and started to swerve, the driver trying to break the gunner's aim. That's opening to that chapter there.
And we find out all kinds of things about Saul there, too.
Just a few things, one of which is that, you know, it sounds like his sister is in the car with him, and she's not. One of the things that we do with Saul beginning in the second book He's been forbidden to see his parents or his family. He's dead. The world thinks that Saul Imbirowitz died in Chicago in February of 1929, and so he's not allowed to go see his family. And as a way to compensate for that, Saul tends to have a lot of conversations in his head with his mother and his father and his sister, taking on different roles and personas, and basically giving him, you know, either as his conscience or, in the case of Sarah, generally his is pointing out all of his problems and foibles and mistakes and everything. And so it's a lot of fun to write it that way.
I enjoyed that too. All the voices inside of him really added to that. Other than unbooks, what's going on with Wrath of the Fury Blade?
So Wrath of the Fury Blade is our first book. We have a second series that Coy and I write that's a fantasy detective series. So it's a detective story set in a fantasy world. Wrath of the Fury Blade was the first book in that series. We have a second book in that series that came out last year called Joy of the Widow's Tears. And we're in the process of writing the next book in that series that we hope to have out next year, although it just depends on how quickly I can finish writing the first draft of that book. And it's called Fear of the Minister's Justice.
Oh.
And that one continues that particular series.
Now, what I wonder is how you managed to run a publishing company and write two different series at the same time.
I don't sleep a lot.
Yeah, I guess.
and honestly, it's a matter of really juggling and balancing things. You know, I work a full-time job for a local business here in Albuquerque. I run a publishing company, so I publish other authors' works and get them out there. And then I do my own writing with Coy.
Wow.
And it's all a fine bit of juggling. I always try and set aside, if not at least one day a week, a couple of days a week where I can just work on my own material.
Mm-hmm.
Usually it's a Saturday or Sunday or both if I can finagle it, where I just work on my own stuff. That way I have a little bit of break from the publishing side and I can focus on my own stories, or, you know, whether they're the novels or short stories or whatever. You know, so that's what I try and do. You know, as a publisher, I tend to work in the evenings. You know, I come home from my regular job and I work on publishing stuff, you know, whether that's editing or anything else that might be with it. You know, that is needed to get those books written and put out there. So, you know, like I said, though, a lot of it is I just don't sleep a lot.
I guess. Now, when you're writing, especially with these two series, do you finish one story and then go to the next? Do you write them both at the same time? Or how do you manage that?
When we started, I wrote Unremarkable and Wrath at around the same time. I would write on one, set it aside, and write on the other. You know, we weren't sure if we were going to publish or when we would publish at that point in time, so it was really easy to work on one or the other at the same time, you know, so I could switch back and forth. Once we got them published, we knew that we wanted to continue writing them, so the next two books, both of them came out fairly quickly. After each other, I wrote them not quite next to each other in parallel, but I wrote them almost back to back. And now we're at the point where we're kind of alternating so that, you know, one book will come out 1 year and then the next book will come out the next year in a different series, you know, so we can kind of keep that pace going. So, you know, we started working, you know, hand in hand with both series, and we've kind of slowed them back and separated them a little bit. Part of that is just, you know, the timing, you know, making, you know, having the time available to do the writing.
Yeah.
But part of it is to get a little bit of separation so that we can have one series, focus on it, get the marketing and publicity out there for it, and then focus our efforts on the next series.
So do you talk to Coy All the time?
All the time. Whether it's through text or email, we usually talk, even if it's not just on writing, we usually talk once a week. Mm-hmm. We get together and we game online together at least once a week. We try to talk then. Usually when we're doing the writing, it's only after we've both had a chance to go through the manuscript alone, so neither one of us is influencing the other.
Yeah.
Then we sit down and read through it together, which is a good thing, just because I don't want to influence how Coy sees what I wrote in my draft, because he really can bring a lot of things to the character's dialogue and their personalities that I may have intended but not thought about. Usually he'll make a change to a dialogue, a line of text or something, and I'll be like, oh, yeah, that's exactly what they needed to say.
Uh-huh.
What was I thinking?
Right. It's quite a gift to be able to work together apart. So I'm impressed with that.
Yeah.
And you guys have a website, habagerkissy.com?
Yes, that is correct.
And you keep everybody up to date on what's happening with the writing.
We keep everybody up to date there, as well as on usually our Facebook page as well.
Mm-hmm.
The website, I think you were going to start. I'll finish. So it's habagerkissy.com. So habagerkissy.com. So it's just our last names.
Mm-hmm.
And we post our updates there. We have a blog that we keep there as well, where occasionally we talk a little bit about our writing and some of our backstory and our world building that we do.
Oh, yeah.
I use it to post reviews that I do for usually indie authors. And if we have our own writing that we want to post there, we'll post some there that's stuff that's like experimental stuff or other things.
It's a well-done website. And what are you working on now?
So right now, working on the first draft of the next Riva Lunaria, our fantasy series book, The Fear of the Minister's Justice.
Okay.
I think I've got 4 chapters left to write.
Oh, good.
In the first draft. This one's a bit of a monster. I'm over 106,000 words already. And
oh,
then,
wow.
Which is considerable. I mean, that's...
Yeah.
If the Saul books are much thinner
mm-hmm.
because they're written first person, so there's a lot that is left unsaid,
right?
And they average 50 to 55,000 words. So the Riva books tend to be a lot bigger, and this one so far is one of our longer ones.
Wow.
Although Coy may come through and go, well, geez, slash that, slash, yeah, so
right.
Who knows how it's going to end up. So we're working on it. We're also developing, like I said, we have a standalone book that we want to do with one of the characters from the Saul series, Joe.
Good.
Who is a vampire that Saul meets,
mm-hmm.
Interacts with in both, in all 3 books, but only learns that he's a vampire in book 2. And he interacts with him again, travels down to Kansas City, because Joe is a slightly different vampire. He's a different kind of vampire than
right.
what Saul is. And Saul kind of needs an advantage to be able to take on this new threat that he's discovered in Unavoidable. And we want to tell Joe's story a little bit as well, because he's going to play a part in the next trilogy as well, so we want to kind of give a bit of a background on who Joe is so people can understand him a little bit better. So we're in early draft stages of that, in the sense of working through some of the plot points and everything. So,
right. I like Joe. I'm glad that we'll see him again.
Yeah.
Good character.
He's an interesting one. The title of his book, his standalone, has been mentioned twice in the books or a couple of times in the books already. I'll give it out here because it doesn't spoil too much, but
okay.
It's called Unspeakable.
Oh.
And it continues with the titles
mm-hmm.
And everything, but it fits very much with Joe's backstory because he does some unspeakable things that he's not proud of.
Oh.
And so we learn a lot about, his past and really what makes him who he is at the time when Saul meets him. So that one's going to be fun.
Well, you do have fun. The books are very readable and they have humor in them and a good story. So it all works together.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. check us, you know, check out our books. You know, you can find out information about our books at our website. Feel free to follow us on Facebook if you use that particular platform. Our books are available nationwide. You can get them through online retailers as well as in ebook format there. You can also order them from any of your local bookstores. They don't happen to have them in stock, they can order them in.
Right.
So we always encourage people to support their local bookstores, just because I enjoy my local bookstores and they need to stay around, and and they give us so much joy and fun. So contact them, and like I said, if they don't carry it in stock, encourage them to do so, but they can order the books in.
It's been great talking with you, and I look forward to the next one coming out.
Well, thank you very much, Tracy. I appreciate it.
Thank you. And that was Jeff Habiger talking about his books Untouchable and Unavoidable. This is Tracy Hales-Vass with Right on Four Corners on KSJE 90.9 FM in Farmington, New Mexico.
Did you enjoy that podcast? We hope that you did. And if you did, share it with your friends. And if you really want to keep podcasts like this coming, please support KSJE. You can do it easily online at ksje.com.